Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric Hultgren, along with the Bailing brothers, Nick and Andy, are in this week to talk about, well, I mean, it's, I don't even know what to say about this sport at this point, because every week where I'm like, oh, this would be pretty A to B to C, we'll talk about whether or not Alistair Overeem should get a title shot, and then we'll talk about Anderson Silva and Uriah Hall, and then I'm like, no, we're going to talk about a crazy Chinese conglomerate buying the UFC and making Dana White go to Siberia, because that's apparently what's going to happen. So I think we'll start there. It was we are recording this portion of it anyway on Wednesday. So what happens between now and when you hear it is really out of our control, quite honestly. But on Tuesday evening, it was rumored that we are in the final phases of a four-part deal between four different groups that are trying to buy the UFC. And later on in the show, we're going to talk to a guy on Twitter. You may know him as Talk MMA. His name is Diz. And he was one of the guys who broke the story in 2014 when there was another group that was trying to buy the UFC that got right up to the doorstep and it just sort of fell through and didn't happen. So it's not that this is some sort of crazy unicorn thing that's riding an alien that's, you know, giving birth to a dragon thing that isn't possible. It was really close to being possible in 2014. I think, and as I said this on Twitter today, guys, I think this week for it to be going through is really kind of like the worst case scenario of the guy coming in on day one to see what in the hell is going on in the office, as you have Anderson Silva is now missing a body part. Dennis Seaver is out for some undisclosed injury. Conor McGregor thinks he's fighting Canelo Alvarez. You just got this all this craziness happening in the sport, and I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine what this looks like with another buyer.
It looks like to me, if you were asking me like what they're trying to accomplish with this, maybe it's that next level of investment, because breaking into these new markets of really getting into China and any of the Asian markets over there to really step in and use them. And if they're not playing ball, they're not going to be in there. And that's the next step that they're going to be taking.
But do you not find it weird, Nick, to go? I mean, I know that there was a UFC before these three were a part of it, but it's weird reading all the things between last night and today where some of the deals of the, I don't know if it's two of the four or one of the four or all of the four that are like, yeah, we love the idea of this thing. That bald dude over there, he needs to go away and never come back. Like, we don't want any part of Dana White to be a part of this thing, which to me, he's the brand. Like, it'd be like trying to, I mean, and I know it's a family business, so it's not really an apt comparison, but it would be like if I woke up tomorrow and the WWE was owned by Coca-Cola and Vince McMahon was working at Best Buy.
I wonder if it has anything to do with the litigation that they have going on with the class action lawsuit, and if they're like looking to shop it around before that actually starts to. And I'm not even joking. I mean, for real.
Like, hey, let's get rid of this thing before that thing happens.
Right. And then the people held responsible for it are no longer there, and they're not looking at the fitting the bill anymore.
Well, and you know, Andy, you've seen on Twitter, and you've certainly seen on most of the blogs, lots of people wondering where the media scrum went. Dana White used to do 20 minutes after every event. He used to be there for the whole press conference at the end of the fight. He is now there for 8 total minutes, in which Dave Scholler comes up and does the rest of it, and he's been super quiet, save for today when he's running around going, it is not true, sort of kind of not true, wink, wink, nod, nod, can I go now?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, he has gotten away from being such the face, unless it's certain announcements and stuff, or it's a TV appearance where you seem to see him more. But that behind-the-scenes stuff, you're not seeing him as often. And I mean, I know that some people will say, like, oh, to get this more legit, like, you need to have someone that's more respectful of the media and isn't dropping F-bombs on the fans of the sport. And so I don't know if maybe to, you know, a $3.5 to $4 billion valuation of the company if they're like, all right, why don't you keep doing some of the stuff you do, but not everything that you do, and then we're going to sell this because we bought it for $2 million, and everyone's going to make a lot of money.
Sure, everyone is going to – that's, of course, the point of having a buyout. Mm-hmm. You're seeing this in where we work at the MLive Media Group. You're seeing this in our industry where Gannett is trying to do a hostile takeover of Tribune because they just have more money, right? So at the end of it, people in Tribune are going to make money even though they don't want it because they don't want to be taken over. That is not what's happening here. But I would push back a little bit and go, is there, can this sport be more legitimate? I mean, are we still living in this universe where we think it's going to be the NFL with punching? Because I don't know that I don't know that it goes much further than this. I don't expect to have the Super Bowl on Sunday, but on Saturday, everybody's tuning into NBC to watch UFC. I don't see that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, there are parts I personally like the way he is out there. I think it sets it apart. I mean, even in MMA, it sets it apart. Like, I don't really care to listen to what Larry Coker has to say as much
Scott
as Dana
Coker.
White. Oh, yeah, Scott Coker.
Larry Coker is his unsuccessful brother.
I don't know why I said Larry.
Oh, Larry Coker.
The legend of Larry Coker.
He's coming in to buy the UFC.
Ice cream salesman who gave up on his dream to buy the UFC to let his brother run Bellator.
I don't even know his name. That's why I don't listen to him.
So as of right now, I mean, there's really not much to talk about other than the lead candidate right now is a Chinese conglomerate that seems to have the most money and the most interest in this. What happens when they purchase it or if they purchase it? I mean, it remains to be seen. But a lot of things, as you were just talking, Andy, could happen. It could. Dana White could be a part of it. It could not be a part of it. Some of what I've read have said that they'll still have their tentacles into it so that it doesn't completely shift hands from, you know, like when you walk into a restaurant that was Italian an hour ago and it's all of a sudden Americana and they do neither of them well anymore. They're trying to not do that because they've got another TV deal coming up in 19 that's going to escalate the relationship with Fox a little bit more. I'm not really sure the details of that, but they want to make, everybody wants to make sure, especially when it's got a $4 billion evaluation, that to use some Silicon Valley vernacular, right, that we want to make sure it's a unicorn and not a rhinoceros, because that is not what anyone wants out of this whole thing. So we will keep you posted. And like I said, a little bit later on, we'll talk to one of the guys who broke the news on Twitter almost 2 years ago at this point that there was another group that had stepped up and essentially walked to the front door and went, nah, it just didn't work out. So we will talk to him a little bit later on. Other stuff that are happening. We had a fight night in Amsterdam, and if you were Dutch, you had one hell of a night. If you were not so much Dutch, it was not your favorite night ever to fight in the UFC. As Alistair Overeem fought Andrei Arlovsky, and I don't know, I mean, Nick, you and I briefly talked about this on Monday. I went back and watched again last night. I love that people want Overeem to get this title shot. Using MMA math, it makes perfect sense. I know that Kane seems like he's the number one contender if he gets past Travis Brown. Howsoever, Overeem has beaten Werdum, therefore MMA math, right? Looking at that fight again, guys, neither one of those guys looked really awesome.
When's the last time you said that about a heavyweight fight, that they looked really awesome? I think the aging of the fighters and just the pace that they're trying to set at right now.
I fully anticipate this. To be honest, I'm being totally honest. I fully anticipate to enjoy the hell out of Stipe and Werdum. And maybe they're on a different caliber of heavyweight fighter. And you know, some of what JDS has done and certainly what Kane has done, they're just a different type of fighter. This looked very, what you're nodding to, right? Very plodding, very heavyweight-esque, very, here come the big guys. Are gonna, like, that's what it looked like to me. And you know, I walked out of there and went, okay, I get the MMA math. I get you want to give him a shot. But, I mean, it's not like I saw Stephen Wonderboy Thompson put away Johnny Hendricks. That's not what I saw. And so I don't know that I'm walking away from this being super excited about this title fight between Stipe and Overeem or Werdum and Overeem.
There's still a little bit of stigma left on Arlovsky of everyone calling out that questionable chin, right? He's lost. He won three in a row, so everyone started saying he's back and he can take these shots. Well, now he's lost a couple of fights again, and so now everyone's starting to claim, well, yeah, you beat Al, or you beat friggin' what's his name there? Arlovski. Thank you. Yeah, you beat Arlovski, but we just remember him from the old again, so now your accomplishments aren't as good as what they used to
be. And aside from you kind of pointing that out, you haven't really seen a lot of people questioning him, and I wonder, hot take, right? I wonder if Bigfoot Silva wasn't on this card, if more people would. Because Bigfoot Silva got destroyed in 4 seconds, and he's lost, what, his last seven, and four of them were by brutal knockout, and two of them were in this odd fashion where he walks at a human being and takes one shot and it's game over. If he's not on that card, you're damn right we're talking about, hey, Andre, like, can we sit down and have a real man-to-man conversation about your place in the sport? I mean, you've been here for a long time. You've done some really cool things. You nearly beat Fedor before that weird flying knee thing that you somehow, like, before that all happened. And we appreciate all that stuff. And there was a minute that you were on the tear, and I know you and I, Nick, we talked on Monday that some people try to make these comparisons between the on-again, off-again streaks of Mark Hunt and Andre Arlovski. And to me, Andy, they're two very different fighters in that Mark still seems to be able to take a licking and keep on ticking. Like, mm-hmm. no matter how he ends up in said fight, yeah. you walk away. I never walk away from a Mark Hunt fight and go, man, he should stop doing that. You just go, right. oh, that's a bummer, or wow, that was totally awesome. Can't wait to see what happens next. Where with Andre, you're like, and certainly with Bigfoot, you're like, please stop, dude. Yeah. Like, seriously, please stop.
Well, I was definitely in the Arlovski fight. I mean, as much if you think that Overeem should get a title shot or not, like, that wasn't a great finish. Like, that the kick with followed by the left hook, like, that was
but KO. It was totally sweet, but what was interesting is going back to watch the fight, and I'll point at you, Nick, because you've got the experience in the room in this, is that save for that one exchange, Overeem threw one punch and waited, then one kick and waited, mm-hmm. then one punch and waited. And
he's
then
the, resting.
You know, this he's powering up for the switch kick, right hand power knockout.
It's like when you have to hold B.
Exactly.
Video game,
yes, it was like old Nintendo days when you're charging up your character to run, you know. And so what's fascinating is, yeah, it was a sweet KO, but could we have seen that in the first minute if he had just thrown a single combination as opposed to one, two, right?
Well, Alistair, if you've watched him all the way from the K1 days, which I have, and through all of Overeem and every different version of him that there's been.
I always forget about Overeem.
Yeah.
I miss him.
He has always been a sniper, and it's been with timing, and it's been with setting traps. I'm not even defending how that fight looked as far as the one, but he's had so much success with the one shot. You used to watch him in K1, and he'd take his gigantic shoulders, and he'd hide them under his ears, and he'd put his gloves up, and he would be fine, and he could take it, and he'd wait, and he'd deliver the one knee and drop him. So that's kind of always been his style. He's never been a volume guy. He's never been a Stipe Miocic who's going to just pepper. He's always been the one shot, one kill, and you see it when he's not knocking the person out in the first round or the third round. He's such a good striker that it's just he's not doing much until he does it.
Well, and he certainly set that up as a trap, because Overeem was not expecting a switch kick at that point. Arlovski was not expecting, maybe Overeem wasn't expecting that either. but Arlovski was not expecting that because it was this one, so maybe for the viewer, I just need to chill out and let him do his thing. But I certainly didn't walk away from that fight save for the KO and go, that was the type of performance I would expect you to put away Cain Velasquez or expect you to put away Stipe, both of whom are going to throw a ton of stuff at you while you're trying to defend that stuff. I don't know that you're going to have the time to do the one and wait three beats and do the one, because they're going to keep coming and take you down and pick you back up and take you down and punch you in the, it just does. That style to me doesn't work with the three guys at the top of the ecosystem, in my opinion.
Well, it doesn't. In fact, his losses show that he does lose to a guy that's active. If you can survive those sniper shots, if you can get away from his timing just a little bit and play the shot game, survive into the later rounds and the accumulation of shots, they do start to add up on him. That's why he has been knocked out as many times as he has. It has nothing to do with does he have a question chin or not. It's the accumulation through the fight is the thing that adds up and will eventually take him out of a fight.
And we'll circle back to talk about what you guys think about Overeem being the guy when we get to talking about this weekend. But I want to keep talking about some of the fights that were on this card, because there were some interesting fights. Of course, you had Bigfoot Silva being put out by Stefan Struve, which was, look, save for what you want to say about Bigfoot Silva, for Struve, I mean, you can't have a better moment. I mean, the only person who I think sucked it in better and, like, took that moment, which was the fun, the for me, the most fun, was Overeem in the middle of that cage just kind of sucking up all the adulation of everybody, you know, in Rotterdam. I thought that was super cool. Obviously, Struve had the better of the night since he worked for about 4 seconds to get that thing. But I don't know. When I see those fights, I don't know what to think about Struve. Because you didn't learn anything, and I don't know that knocking out Bigfoot means anything anymore. Because I feel like my daughter could knock out Bigfoot Silva at this point.
Well, when you,
if she just let him walk him walk towards the cage.
When you see someone like Struve, and when a KO like that happens so fast, and you can even talk about, you know, McGregor and Aldo or this fight, like,
how dare you, sir?
when you see that, Nick and I were laughing. We were watching it together, and I said the excitement from him comes from, like, yes, I'm a heavyweight and I didn't get punched once and the fight's over and I'm going to get paid and maybe I'll get, like, knockout or a bonus for this fight. And he just runs around and jumps on the cage and waves his flag. Well, it doesn't really show, you know, what, and he's been in a weird situation with, you know, being gone for a while, the health issues, and then the one fight getting canceled right before. So I'd say that, in my opinion, he's kind of in the middle right now of, I don't know who would be a good opponent for him next.
Yeah, because he's certainly at that where Frank Mir was, right?
Yeah,
if,
right.
If Frank Mir, if that thing doesn't get cleared up, right, he's done because he's not going to sit out 2 years. He's going to be in his 40s, and that's just not a possibility. But that's where Struve is for me, too, because I don't know anything about this because it's not like I didn't go into Sunday afternoon going, sure hope he wins because Bigfoot is, you know, kind of the gatekeeper to being really successful at the heavyweight division, because it's not true.
Well, maybe he is.
That was a loser leaves town fight, if you ask me.
Well, for Bigfoot's sake, let's hope so, because he does not need to take that damage anymore. And we're seeing these guys that just don't know when to hang it up. And I would even argue, and I've said this, and we'll talk about the Dennis Seaver situation, but, like, I don't want to see George St. Pierre, and I do not want to see BJ Penn back. I don't want to see it. All I see is Nate Diaz destroying him and them having to throw in the towel. That's all I see. And I don't care what you've done in the time away. The sport has evolved faster than whatever you're doing.
Well, in the case of Bigfoot, I mean, he was a guy that had legitimate medical conditions for
TRT.
TRT,
yeah.
And he can't. And mm-hmm. You've seen a legitimate decrease in his performance because of it. I mean, he has pituitary gland issues. I mean, it was documented for years and years he's had this thing. And you've only seen him get worse on that. The problem is, heavyweights get more chances in the UFC than anyone else because of the shallow roster and because they're big names, because they're big people. But if you let him go and the UFC lets him go, I don't even know if it's a better choice, because does he end up in Bellator?
Yeah, he ends up because I don't think he knows any better. I think he certainly goes to Bellator.
Right. So then the UFC gave up a name, no matter what. It's a name. They gave it to Bellator, and he would probably win one, two, maybe in a row, and then he's going to take another series of knockouts. So I don't know if the knockouts are going to be better in the UFC or they're going to be let him go somewhere else and make money for a different organization.
My counterpoint to that would be a guy by the name, what's his name again? Oh, Benson Henderson. That was the guy I was thinking of, like, where you shouldn't let him go. He's a superstar. Oh, wait, he got stopped in the very first fight he had in Bellator.
I don't know if you would say that Benson Henderson and Bigfoot Silva are both as decorated as each other.
In which direction are you going with this argument? Because I'm really excited for you to tell me the long legacy that Bigfoot Silva is going to leave in the octagon.
Just for your excitement, yeah, that's what I was talking about.
But my point is, the UFC seems to have a sixth sense on when to send these guys, knowing full well that, hey, Benson, it's not as easy as you think anymore over in Bellator. They've been doing some scouting. They've got some decent guys. You might not know any of their names. Maybe you don't know who Will Brooks is, but you probably don't want to fight him. And here's your first fight, and it turns out you probably didn't want to fight that guy either, right? So I'll be interested to see what they do, because they seem to kind of know. I mean, I would have argued that Mitrione was a bigger loss than if they let Bigfoot Silva go, because I still think that Mitrione's got some legs on him, save for all the damage he took to his eye from Travis Brown, I still think he was a fun fight that people wanted to see.
Oh, and I think the difference there is that he fought out his contract so he could test the free market. This wouldn't be getting the pink slips and then going to find the free market. I feel like, I mean, they're both coming off losses, but I feel like that's a different story as far as getting picked up by the UFC.
1,000%. When you see a guy like Bigfoot Silva, I don't see a lot of those guys that are waking up in the morning and go, you know what the best thing for my health is? To not do this anymore. They're going, well, I mean, Dana just fired me, but Scott Coker wants to call me, so we'll sign. I'm Anderson Silva. I'm 40 years old. I'll sign a 15-fight deal in the UFC, right? Because that's a really great idea.
Well, and I mean, if we're going to be foreshadowing anything coming up, I mean, the Nogueira brothers have been doing that for years and years. And
yeah, but only one of them still fights.
Right, and he's fighting on a UFC pass prelim.
He is. Well, so we have theories on the show about that. That I really feel, and I know we're a little bit fragmented today, so you just have to kind of deal with that. But like, I really feel that if you want to build that product up, you got to put stuff on there that people want to watch. And putting the Nogueira, I mean, look, when you look at the card this weekend, it's like every Brazilian fighter you've ever heard of in your entire life. So some of them have to go on the prelims. That's just, there isn't enough. I don't want to watch a 16-hour pay-per-view. It's not WrestleMania or Brazilian WrestleMania, right? Like, I don't want to watch that. So they got to go somewhere. And if you like the Nogueira brothers or you're a big fan of Lil Nog, maybe you're going to give him $9 this weekend to kind of start watching this thing prior to UFC 200. And I think that's what they're trying to do. You can laugh all you want, bro.
No, I'm laughing because I thought you meant they're going to pay him $9 to fight on the prelims.
They might pay him $9. $9 to show and $10 to win.
I wanted to touch base with one more comment that I think you'll really like on where I think Stefan Struve should go next. I think he should probably fight avenge his last loss against Jared Rothschild.
I'm glad
you interrupted the show for that.
Yeah.
Andy.
Well, I mean, I was going to bring it up a second ago.
Because they're
going
to have to fight in a parking lot since Jared Rothschild is in desperate need of employment at this point. Okay, so the other fun fight, I thought this was the Tumanov-Gunnar Nelson fight was, I thought, spectacular. And the Gunnar Nelson that we've been waiting for in one of his biggest tests. I mean, there's been times where you've expected Gunnar Nelson, and again, we talked about this a little bit before the show. There's been times when you've expected Gunnar Nelson to kind of be that guy that comes out there and he can look as bored as he wants, look like, you know, Damian Maya or any of those guys who just don't look like they're either excited or unexcited to be where they are right now and perform. And he's had a couple lackluster performances, but he looked like a different dude. And Nick, I know you said he looked like a really big Conor McGregor at this point because he's kind of embracing that karate stance. He was using it for the setups. And Lord help you at this point if he gets you to the ground because he just looked redonkulous.
What's really happening with him is I think he's really starting to feel the freedom of he has no qualms with going to the ground. So he can mock, I mean, if you're going to say the Conor McGregor style, that karate style, which he did. Andy actually made that observation during the fight. But he can mock that because he can throw that kick. He can throw that spinning back kick that won't help him because if it goes to the ground, he's happy. Like, that's a good thing
sure.
for him.
Yep.
And so I think that what you saw in this one was the freedom to really express that and knowing that he has enough confidence in his hands now that he's not going to take a shot that he shouldn't because he did something stupid. He's doing it right, and if he does it wrong, he's going to get taken down, which that's what he'd hope for.
Right, right. And he made quick work of Tumanov in the second round, and I know there was some discussion this afternoon. Luke Thomas was doing his live chat. There was some discussion on the live chat about this this interesting new resurgence in the last three or four events. There have been a lot of guys who have gone to the chin crush as opposed to the RNC, right? Instead of the rear naked choke, they're just going to break your jaw. And that's exactly what Gunnar didn't even try and set it up. He's just like, I don't care. You know, and Tumanov didn't really wait too long to tap to that. It's interesting how that move has started to evolve, where it used to be even a year ago, 2 years ago, it's all of this hand fighting. You know, you would go to MMA schools or jiu-jitsu schools, you hear about the two-on-one and make sure that you've got the two-on-one so you can always grab that one so he can't choke. And now guys are like, they're either doing it on their own shoulder, but they're just going after your chin. They don't care if it gets under the chin at all. They're just going to break your jaw or try to. And you're seeing Machiesa, that's how he won his last fight. Gunnar Nelson wins it this way.
I think it's part of the evolution of other sports coming together in the MMA. So with jiu-jitsu and the more, you know, historical or original style of jiu-jitsu, now like, well, if I just get in that same position and just twist his neck or crush his jaw, like, it's going to work and it's easier to get. So I think it's just that evolution of the MMA fighter bringing another tool into the game.
It's crazy stuff. So Gunnar Nelson with a big win, which leads us, of course, to this weekend. We have UFC 198, where we go to Brazil, and in Anderson Silva's hometown. Anderson Silva will not be fighting because he had to fight with his own gallbladder, and his gallbladder won. And he was rushed to the hospital at some point yesterday. He ended up having surgery this morning. It was successful. He seems to be fine. We'll be out of the hospital on Friday. But that means that Uriah Hall's fight with him was scrapped, and thus Uriah Hall was scrapped from the paper. Preview, which, given our relationship with Uriah Hall on the show, could not happen to a nicer guy.
Yeah, that was I was kind of bummed to hear that, just based on how that whole card was set up, seeing that fight just being in the middle of a pay-per-view.
Oh, for sure. I mean, for sure. Well, that's kind of the bonkers thing about this card, is if it had stayed together, there were a lot of people that wanted to know what is going to happen in this fight, right?
Oh,
because you have these two guys who are three different degrees of themselves. You know, which Uriah Hall is going to show up? Which Anderson Silva is going to show up? Did Anderson learn from that Bisping fight and go, I am not turning the off switch on until somebody pulls me off you, and that means I'm going to murder you in the first 2 minutes? Or is he going to get worked by Uriah Hall using kind of a nouveau version of what Anderson Silva was made famous by? So my hope, and I think a lot of people's hopes, is that the fight gets rescheduled, because obviously it's not fair to really anybody to put Uriah Hall versus anybody on 72 hours notice. And if you look at that card in Brazil, I don't know that you needed to. And so they saved him for another day, which hopefully will be rescheduled against Anderson Silva. Other fights this weekend, you've got some big ones. You've got Stipe Miocic and Fabricio Werdum for the heavyweight title, which, man, I'm really excited about this fight. And I think I really do feel, and I'm looking up the odds right now, but I really do feel that Stipe could make it a bad time in Brazil this weekend.
I really hope. I want Stipe to win. I think that will be a fun story. One of those guys that, when he first started coming around, like, it wasn't like, oh, he's going to be the next champion, but he just keeps going through people. And I think it'd be pretty fun to get him to be the heavyweight champ after this weekend. I think there's a good chance of that.
And he's only slightly the underdog. It's Verdum's minus 155 to Miocic is plus 135. So, it's not too big of an underdog, but certainly the underdog, because he's not the champ, and so you would that come to expect that. That said, I really do think of all of the, if you're going just by the odds, of all of the odds, he's certainly the one that I think has the best chance of kind of being the upset, if that's even an upset. I think it's a pretty even fight, but I really, to your point, I've loved watching him evolve as a fighter. This is a very fun fight to watch, and excited to see if this happens. And if this happens, I'm more interested, Nick, in Miocic and Kane as the next fight, just if that's the matchup. I get why Overeem's the guy if he ends up being the guy, but from a fan, I would rather do Kane Stipe as the next fight.
I would too, just from the technical side of it, and two people who really tend to stick to game plans. And, you know, like you were saying with Overeem, throw one shot, take a big deep breath, throw one shot. I think it'd be interesting to see what Kane brings to the table as far as that forward momentum and the outside footwork and then inside footwork that Miocic is really kind of known for. And by that, I mean he's either at 6 feet or 6 inches in his fight, but that 6 inches is really dangerous for him in that one because of what Kane has. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him fighting more off the back foot than he normally does.
And then, of course, the co-main event at this point is Jacare Souza, Vitor Belfort. Jacare is favored in this one. And if you've listened to this show for more than one episode, you know that I am a huge, huge Jacare fan. So I would love to see him beat Vitor Belfort, and think certainly he's got the chops to do it. He's been talking all week about the training that he's done. And much like, not to the same degree, but certainly much like what happened to Bigfoot Silva. Vitor does not look the same in the post-TRT phase. So going against a guy like Jacare, I think is... it's going to be a really, really interesting fight. And all of these obviously get really interesting when you're in Brazil because it's just a different vibe there. And so guys just fight different. They just kind of they amp up for that crowd because that crowd, much like when you're over in Japan, those two crowds get the sport better than anybody else, obviously, because they sort of came from those two countries.
Well, it's interesting because usually, and I know it doesn't always work out this way, but the UFC, for the most part, will put a Brazilian versus a foreigner of Brazil,
sure.
Where this is two main guys from Brazil. Like usually you'd have at least some sort of national pride in this one. So it's going to split the crowd, and I bet you like this is just going to be nuts just to watch from every time someone touches someone, the whole crowd's going to tear down the place.
Well, because my guess would be, and you know, I have not done a whole bunch of research on where the crowd would lie, but my guess is Jacare is going to be the favorite, like the fan favorite in this one. And so, you know, Vitor playing a little bit of the heel in that regard, it would be fun to watch. Of course, we have the UFC debut of Christiane Cyborg Santos as she is taking on Leslie Smith in the most ridiculous odds of the night. So if you're betting, this is the one to bet on because Cyborg is -1700 and Leslie Smith is +1000.
So you need to put a lot of money to make anything in return on her.
Yes, unless Leslie Smith can do the impossible, which I don't think anybody thinks she can. Obviously, nobody thinks she can. The thing about Leslie Smith, if you've never watched her fight, is Cyborg might actually have to kill her. Like, she is a dog in those fights and is going to keep coming and keep coming. It'll look very similar to what the Rose Paige Van Zandt fight. You know, Paige, no matter, even though Paige really didn't have a shot, Paige just kept fighting and kept fighting and kept fighting. Leslie is a little bit grindier, so it's going to be a lot more of trying to explode out and do the things that she wants to do. But Cyborg should make quick work of her, and then I guess we'll see what's next.
Let me be clear on the statement I'm about to make, but if I were to put money on this one, I would put it on Leslie. Because of the odds.
Because you'll, I don't think she has a chance in hell, but yeah, if you're going to bet on it.
Well, the reason why I would is because of Cyborg's having to cut to 140, okay? So her, if she survives, like you said, her keep coming.
Her camp says it's gone wonderfully. It's the best cut that she's ever had.
Okay, then I stand totally correct. And that's where, like, that's actually the name of what are the – that's the storyline of this. Can she do 140 even? Because if she's going to be the 140-pound or 145 if they make that, this first fight of getting down there, if she can gas out after the first one because of that huge dehydration cut that she has to do with no IVs, remember. So it's going to be an interesting
I one. Do remember. No IVs.
Thanks.
You're welcome. That is clearly she's. I mean, that's why the odds are set up, right? She's gonna have a harder time beating the scale than she is Leslie Smith if she can get to that point. And then, what does she look like when she gets to that point? They've said that she's gotten to 140. All joking aside, her camp says this is the easiest one ever. But nothing in my brain feels like 135 is just 5 pounds away.
No. If anybody's ever made a cut, they know what that last five feels like, and this is already 5 pounds past what she ever wants to do, let alone what she's actually capable of. There comes a certain point where your bones start to weigh more than you can physically weigh in at, and you can't weigh less than that.
So that's what you will see with Cyborg and Leslie Smith. Shogun taking on Corey Anderson. Interestingly enough, Shogun is the underdog in this fight. So, again, with the Brazil crowd behind Shogun, this will be a fun, fun fight to watch. That is not, even though you may be looking at the card, that is not what's going to kick off the card. They're actually going to move up the Alves-Barbarina fight. That will be the first fight on the pay-per-view, taking the place of Silva and Hall. So, in order, it'll be Alves-Barbarina, Shogun, Anderson, Cyborg, Smith, Souza, Belfort, and then the main event of Werdum and Miocic. And as we were joking earlier, you get Lil Nog against a barista on Fight Pass, so you can check that out. On the prelims, you get this fight I love. Damian Maia and Matt Brown. Fight I love. And Matt Brown, if you missed, was on Luke Thomas's show on Sirius, and Luke was like, bro, why did you take this fight? And Matt Brown, which is typical Matt Brown, why people love Matt Brown. He said, look, it's a terrible matchup, which is why I love this fight. I want to see what happens when you put me in a terrible matchup. And in this sport at this particular time in 2016, those dudes don't exist. there's too much on the line to lose. So I love having a guy like Matt Brown at 170 who's willing to be like, yo, man, this is awful. Let's see what happens when we go do awful. So, and I mean, I don't know who you guys are going to pick in this one, because stylistically it's just a terrible matchup for Matt Brown. That's not to say Matt Brown can't win this fight, but it's a terrible matchup for him.
Well, Matt Brown, in the eyes of the fan, can't lose this fight. If you can, like, he has to lose six fights before he starts to lose in the eye of the fan.
Totally, but monetarily, when you've got guys that are like counting pennies because of this crazy Reebok deal, like losing is a huge deal. So I love when you've got a guy who's like, meh, whatever. Yeah. This is terrible. Let's go do terrible.
My heart wants Brown to win this one, but I would not be surprised to see Damian Maia actually end up taking this fight. But that's just, like, my heart doesn't want that.
Do you see decision, or you think it's a finish here?
I'm gonna have to say that it would be a finish. I think if it goes decision, it'd be Brown.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
I agree with that. I think that he might be able to grind out a victory, but I don't know if he would be able to get a finish. So I'm thinking if it's a finish, maybe Maia would take that, and then Brown maybe grind out a victory, split decision.
Who are you guys picking with? And then we'll wrap. Well, we'll talk about one more thing, and then we'll wrap for the day. Shogun and Anderson.
I think that Anderson will win that fight
easily.
Yes.
Okay.
I am going to agree with my brother here and go Shogun.
No, that was, you disagreed.
You
with
totally
me.
Disagreed.
I totally disagree with my brother, and yeah. I'm going Shogun.
We love you for that. All right. A couple other things to talk about. Rhonda just settled an out-of-court lawsuit with her book because her ex-manager feels that it defamed him. The settlement, this is the strangest thing and why I'm bringing this story up, mostly because I'm contractually obligated to mention Ronda Rousey until she fights again. But what's interesting about this, the outcome of this lawsuit, is she and her team had to fix minor adjustments in the book nearly a year after it came out, after millions of people have already read it, to adjust the defaming of her ex-manager. So they had to change some lines to make it seem like he was a much bigger deal in her getting to the UFC than I guess the book indicates. Her camp has been very silent on this because I guess since it was an out-of-court settlement, it was supposed to be locked tight and nobody was supposed to talk about it. The ex-manager is not really keeping his end of the bargain. But I still find it really interesting that a judge is like, yeah, just change a couple sentences, call this thing good. Even though like 10 million people read this book? Yep. Even though 10 million people already read the book and have their own perception, just change the, you know, change the ink and we're good.
Books don't sell quite as well a year after as they do no, when
well,
they promote
books
it.
Books don't sell quite as well, period.
Yeah.
And then they certainly don't yell, you know, don't sell quite as well when you're like, new writer's version, we changed four sentences.
Yeah.
Try and find them. And we talked about this early on but didn't really get into the details. Dennis Seaver out versus BJ Penn. So if you're excited to see BJ Penn back. Nick, I mean, I know you said right before we started that, like, there's a line of people that are going to want to fight him. I don't know who ends up getting the nod to fight him, but depending on who that is, that might end up being better for BJ Penn because I don't think Dennis Seaver was that's not the warm-up fight you're looking for, or at least not the one I would be looking for.
Well, you know, at this point in BJ Penn's career, this is what you usually do to me, where we talk about a fighter who might be past his prime, and you say, well, if not then him, then who?
Like, yes.
Who is next?
We can play that game. All right. So it was going to be Dennis Seaver, right? So we're fighting at 45. Who is available? I think that's the first thing, right?
Right. Well, and it's not that. Is, you know, the part of it while you're looking this up is just the fact that
do you just have Max Holloway end it?
it's just
passing
like
of the Hawaiian guard.
Yes, exactly. Like yes, Hawaii versus Hawaii. This will be over quickly.
Everybody who's not
number like three contender looking for the next title shot is going to be lining up for this fight because they want it. Anybody who could make a name to everybody who already is a name and wants a fight, because you know BJ could come out and he could have the Greg Jackson magic on him and he could win this one, but if he's proved his last few outings, that's not what's going to happen, and you do get the name of BJ Penn on your win record just like Lyoto Machida has.
Yeah, I mean, oh, Max Holloway's already fighting Lamas, so they'd have to split that up to do that. So that won't work. I don't know.
What about Bruce Leroy? Alex Caceres.
Yeah, no. I like that one if you want to see BJ Penn win, or at least be competitive, because I think that's, you know, Bruce has... Or Alex, right? Depending on how you're going to refer, has enough holes in his game and has not really evolved in the way that we thought he was going to since Tough. That I think BJ Penn would certainly be competitive in that fight and would be a much better, bathwater warming up to get back into the UFC than Dennis Seaver, who's going to run at you like a rhinoceros and pound your skull in.
Well, and I feel like even though Alex Caceres has, you know, not even much over a 500 record, he still has seemed to be able to get in some good slots on cards and, you know, some of the free cards,
I think he's one of those guys that, like, is just fun to watch,
yeah,
you know?
And he has a good time.
He has a good time. He's always in the fight, even when he's out of the fight, if that makes any sense, right? Like, he's always trying to do stuff. He's not a dude, you know, your Jared Rushell joke, right? Like, he's not a dude who's just going to lay on top of you and make it a super boring thing, and then he loses anyway because it was a terrible fight or whatever the case is. He's a guy that's going to go in there and have some fun with it, and I think that's what you want, and might be able to, if that's the one, right, you might be able to convince me that I want to watch this fight at that point, because that's less scary than Max Holloway, Ricardo Lamas, Dennis Seaver, like any of those guys. That's way less scary for me as a fan of BJ Penn. I have less flashbacks of Nick Diaz at that point with Bruce Leeway. Roy. So, okay, we are going to go talk to the Diz. He is the guy who broke the news about the UFC being nearly sold in 2014. Get us some insight on what's happening right now in 2016. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show. It is Way of the Warrior, and as promised, Diz, you can get him on Twitter at TalkMMA, UFC and MMA insider. Diz, I think it's fair to say you were the guy 2 years ago who was talking about this UFC sale before I would feel safe to say anybody else. That's a fair assessment, right?
I got tipped off. Somebody out in Las Vegas who works close to the UFC tipped me off in regards to a sale that was taking place, and they told me that it was by a tech firm who they tipped me off, and they couldn't tell me directly, but if I looked into a tech firm who had a huge financial backing with Skype network, that I would find my answers. So when I found out, when I got to somebody over there, somebody tipped me off. When I was actually able to talk to somebody from Silver Lake Partners, they tipped me off to somebody from Deutsche Bank who actually confirmed that they were trying to partner, to purchase the UFC with Silver Lake Partners.
And so
Deutsche Bank at some point backed out.
And so that's what happens in 2014, why it doesn't get through, because Deutsche Bank backs out.
Yes, from what I understand, Deutsche Bank backed out of the purchase. Now, Silver Lake Partners, WME, and IMG, they're all the same. So they're all the same people. So when you hear WME and IMG all together, IMG, who is in charge of Ronda, for anybody
right.
that didn't know that, they,
right.
their agency is actually in charge of Ronda. When you hear those, you know Silver Lake Partners is in the background somewhere, you know, pulling strings. You know, they've had an equity of more than $20 billion. That sounds like somebody who doesn't even really need a partner to go in on it. They just want somebody to help split the cost.
And so what makes this time, do you think, different? I mean, you're hearing there's multiple people kind of vying for the company at this point, as you're alluding to. Maybe it's not as many as people are seeing. But what makes this time different than 2014? Because you're not alone in a lot of people thinking that this is the time that this company finally sells.
what makes it different is that you just split the cost, basically. You get you put in the vast majority. It's like it's kind of like going into business. Let's just say carpet cleaning business. Let's just say carpet cleaning business, for example. Somebody wanted to own a carpet cleaning business, wanted to put some money into it, didn't really feel comfortable taking all the risk by himself, so they bring in a partner. So the partner comes in, and then he decides he's coming in for a piece. And depending on who puts in what percentage, depends on who's got the majority interest, who's going to have the say-so, obviously. The minority interest, they're going to have some say-so to certain things, but when it comes to the big deals, you know, whoever's got the, you know, whoever's holding the racket's the one that's going to take the swing at the ball. So,
right.
So, in essence, you know, Silver Lake Partners has been after the UFC for a couple of years now, and it's no surprise it was going to happen. And I believe that the Fertitta brothers just purchased the Pearl Palms, the Palm casinos and hotels as well. So, they're going to have even more to do. So getting rid of, you know, something else, you know, that's been frustrating to them over the last couple of years, especially with their deal with Fox. And Fox has had a lot of say-so over the UFC, whether they want to admit it or not. And the way that cards are done, you notice that the pay-per-views have been a lot lackluster. There's been a lot of lackluster pay-per-views where used to they all would hit really hard a long time ago. But now it's just a little bit more watered down because Fox wants content. They want so much content, and they want good content that they're putting good cards, some cards on Fox that I would consider putting on pay-per-view compared to some of the ones that have come up.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. So, you know, as you and I were going back and forth to setting this thing up, you know, my other question was, like, we get new ownership, and I think there's two questions on everyone's mind who is reading these stories and kind of diving in and seeing what this is all about. One, what does this look like in the first 30, 60, and 90 days? And two, which I think is the one that most people are kind of interested in, is Dana White staying? Is Dana White going? If he goes, who is the face of this organization?
Well, first of all, you'd have to bring in a pretty popular face. I mean, I like Dave Stoller a lot. I think that he could be end up being the face of the organization. He's done a lot of role playing for Dana in his absences. But, you know, you want somebody who's going to push and sell that card. Nobody pushes or sells a card like Dana does.
Right.
It's just he's just been asked to hold back. You notice he's not doing the scrums anymore. He's not really responding a whole lot to public criticism the way he used to. And that's because I think he's showing everybody that he is the dog on the leash. You know, he does do respectfully what Lorenzo and Frank ask of him. They've had that long relationship. 30, 60, 90 days isn't good enough, you know, especially when it's not going to tell you how the business is going to be.
Oh, no. I know that. But, like, you know, do they even touch it, or do they just take ownership and let it do what it's going to do for the first 90 days? I know that you'll have no idea if they made an impact in 90 days. But
it's going to happen one of two ways. It's going to happen one of two ways. The UFC is going to remain as it is. They're going to keep all their people, and it's just going to be owned financially by somebody else. Or these new big financial giants are going to come in, they're going to purchase, and they're going to start phasing people out. And that does probably at some point include Dana, which probably will come with a very handsome severance package. I don't think that they really would want Dana out. He's been the face of that organization for more than 20 years.
Right. Right.
Has it been 20 years?
They're
20 years. It was 97,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So. Yep.
So we're getting there. By the time this all takes place, I don't think this will all take place by next year. So we are looking at 20 years by the time somebody else takes over the UFC. I don't think that they're really going to get rid of Dana because he is the brand recognition. So. Dana is going to have to do something so detrimentally illegal and something's going to have to be such a – it's going to have to be a PR mess for them to get rid of – for them to get rid of Dana. I mean, like, slapping a female or you know, sexual assault or something. Like, it's going to have to be something like that before they decide to get rid of Dana. It's going to have to be major.
Sure, sure. Diz joining us. You can find him on Twitter at TalkMMA. As long as I've got you, I got one more question before I let you go. They just did the weigh-ins for UFC 198. Cyborg made it.
How about those weigh-ins,
right?
By the way?
I know, right? Cyborg made it, which I think lots of us are excited about. And I'm obviously not claiming that this will be a hard and fast rule, but you get a good look at her. You think that she can make 3.5 more pounds? I mean, she came in at 138.8. You know, does she make it down to 135, or is this as low as she can go?
You know, I don't know how much time you really have with me on here, how much time you desire with me on here, but I was with Cyborg the night of UFC 148. I was sitting next to her watching UFC 148. We were at Diablo's in Las Vegas at a viewing party. And, I sat next to her pretty much the entire night, and the question always was, could she make 135? And as I was looking, and this was just a couple of months after she was, you know, she had tested positive for PEDs. It was, she was off the stuff, and it was, you know, about 7 months later, she looked like a normal woman. She just looked like a normal woman who works out. But when I look at her, I looked her over, I was just like, oh my gosh, she's carrying so much water weight. I absolutely, at that time, off the juice, off the everything else, absolutely made that determination that I believe that she could make 135. And I think that, and you know, viewing the timeline, she was supposed to make 135 to fight Ronda in the very first WMMA UFC event. And, of course, there was a dividend there. There was one major factor that kept her from doing that, and his name was Tito Ortiz.
Right.
He was her manager. He was the manager. He tried to play hardball with Dana, and he did it at the expense of Cyborg's career. Cyborg's arrival to the UFC is more than 2 years delayed. So we're looking at Cyborg 6 pounds lighter than when she said she couldn't make it under 145. I mean, what's that tell you? It's just another, what, 4 pounds?
Just
even
about,
if
yeah.
She cut another 3 pounds. Even if she cut another 3 pounds, she's looking at 130. She's looking at a bantamweight fight at 136.
It's crazy, man. It's just crazy. You know, it's interesting to see how what all the insanity that's happening in this organization, and especially with her making it and being even under. I think that should be silencing a lot of critics. I don't think that anyone's going to be surprised when she smashes Leslie Smith tomorrow night. But do you?
Leslie Smith's going to need surgery after this fight.
It's going to be ugly, I mean, and especially because Leslie's one of those fighters that really doesn't have a lot of quit unless somebody puts it in her, and which Cyborg certainly is going to do. What do you think? In your best guess, do you think we see Cyborg Ronda next, or what do you think you'd see next with Cyborg?
That was okay. Well, there's a couple of things here. You know, first of all, after this fight, they're going to come back. They're going to go back to the office, you know, essentially, and they're going to talk it out about how much further they think that she thinks she can get down there. I think she's working. I believe is she working with George Lockhart?
I think you're right.
I think she's working with George Lockhart, and if that's true, George Lockhart just knocked her an extra 6 pounds off a 145 pounder, said she couldn't make it any further down. So it's just all about replacing, you know, the muscle adequately. It's not going to kill her to lose a little bit of muscle. I mean, if you looked at her at the weigh-in today, Jesus, she still has plenty of
right.
It. She has more than I do, and I weigh 230. So, with her, gosh, you know, I want to applaud Leslie Smith for taking the fight, even though Holly Holm wouldn't take it. That's another disease too. Managers are a disease. So that's for another day. You guys want me on?
Yeah, I would love to get into that at another time for sure.
So, but in a sense, Cyborg, I think she can't cut the other 4 pounds. There's nothing looking at her up on the scale. There's nothing up there that told me that she couldn't. She did look very lean, but it just depends on where you want to lose the muscle. Everything else from this point forward, it's mostly cardio, less muscle training, and proper diet if she wants to make 135. So...
So okay, let's
it's inevitable.
Yeah, let's play fantasy matchmaker then, and then I'll let you go. So she can make. Let's say she figures out how to make 135. Is it Ronda? Is it New York? Is that your best guess, or what do you think will happen for the rest of the year?
Oh, I think. Well, I don't know. We're not even confident that Ronda's coming back in 2015.
True enough.
Right,
true enough.
So I would say yes. First, Ronda. Second, Holly. And I got to be honest with you, I think Holly has the right style to beat Chris Cyborg with her counter striking and lateral movement. Her length, especially. Holly Holm is one of those difficult females to reach just because she's lengthy. And not to mention, but she's got more combat. She's got more combat experience, hand-to-hand combat experience than Ronda. So there's really not a whole lot Chris is going to throw at her that she hasn't seen before. And not to mention, she got Greg Jackson in her corner, so that also helps as well.
Yes, it does. Diz joining us. You can find him on Twitter covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, a consummate professional, consummate insider. And like I said, when we started this 2014, you were on the forefront of this sale. So if you are a fan listening to this podcast who wants to be inside and see all these things as they kind of break, talk MMA, follow it right now on Twitter. Diz, have an awesome weekend. Give your son a hug from all of us and have an amazing week watching UFC 198.
Hey, thanks, guys.
There he goes, the Diz. You can catch him at Talk MMA on Twitter, and I highly recommend that. All right, we are ready to go. Weigh-ins are done. You can see them on our Facebook account if you missed them this afternoon, at Wow Show. Twitter, at Wow Show. You can catch me at Polymath and Vine, PolyMathandVine, all weekend long, talking MMA and breaking down UFC 198. Have an awesome weekend. We'll catch you next week. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.